help me out with calling and being led. Like, how would you describe in your life times where you felt God's called you specifically to do something and times where you felt like God's led you to? And they might be the same.
Yeah, it's interesting. So my whole musical journey, so I've always felt a calling towards music ministry in some way. Growing up in a musical family, and my, you know, I grew up watching my dad lead services, and my mum playing the organ to then playing the keyboard. And so there was always a desire to carry on that, but also, just to find my own. I just always had a heart and passion towards music for some reason, whether it was my family or people that my dad used to listen to or play in the background. And so I always had a love for it. Dad started teaching me guitar growing up, and then, yeah, there was something about it that I was just like, you know what, I think, yeah, God really wants me to really dive in deep with my music. And so, long story short, I after my high school life, I went to TAFE, which is like tertiary studies here in Australia, in between, I don't know what you guys would call it there, but it's like the bracket between high school and university.
It's like a trade school or associate's degree, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's the one. So I initially started my studies to become a music teacher, because I always taught in the church and outside, whether it was, you know, Sunday school, youth ministries, just teaching kids, you know, life lessons. But I always loved to teach, and I love to learn, and I love to hear from, you know, mentors or people. So, but I initially went to university to become a music teacher. And so then through that, I got my music degree, and then I had to make the decision whether I wanted to pursue with the teaching degree, which was an extra year, or then the opportunity came up for me to study at Bible college. And then I think that was still around the time you were still here.
Right.
And so I've always felt a calling to lead young people to Christ and to be an influence on their lives, but I've never really known what that looked like. But music was always hand in hand with that. And so, then I went to Bible college. Which is on hold at the moment. I've got 6 classes to go.
What? 6 classes?
What's that?
You had 6 classes to go. So like a semester and a half.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, because of the whole voice journey, I guess the biggest battle with the calling and the being led is trying to, because I, you know, you're more of an influence in, you know, non-church circles, I guess, if you want to call, well, in the secular scene, and even from my gigging life, whether it was just weddings or playing at restaurants or pubs, that you find people that are, I don't know, either have come from church or had a bad, you know, relationship with someone in church or were misguided somehow. And so now they've lost contact with all things Christian or anyone. So, I've the calling within music, I've kind of like got both feet in both camps. So I'm still, leading worship services and empowering the youth in the church setting, but I felt my calling to be bigger than that in the outside world of leading workshops to young people at youth centers or to juvenile detention centers, which I really love going there. Which the interesting thing about that is the most attended class out of any program is the Christian church services that are put on, and which I find that amazing. And there's no rules against that, which is interesting as well, because in the educational system in Queensland, and I guess in Australia as a whole, they've really become a lot, you know, more restrictive in regards to sharing the word or saying Jesus or having educational means by a religious like sector or by Christian like association. So that's been a beautiful experience to be part of, seeing the worship services in the juvenile detention center, and having all the program facilitators and the heads guys just saying, like, you know what, you can say anything, you can do whatever you want, like, there's, you know, you don't have to hold back. And so I'm a part of Musicians Making a Difference organization, but I'm also part of, they're called Crosswords Church, so it's like a hip-hop church. And yeah, those are the guys that are, like, really making a difference inside those circles. And I don't even know if I'm answering your question.
No, it's good. I got a couple questions from what you said so far. One is, but Queensland has chaplains in a lot of their schools, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Which, that's kind of unique around Australia, where Queensland allows that to happen, where it may not happen in other states.
Yeah, that's really true. And I just came back from a Queensland chaplain's kind of footy camp. And the government's really supportive, because there's been a few cases where people have tried to take them down and tried to, you know, bring up kind of a lot of tension in regards to, like, we don't need it. But there's always been even more of a support group come over that and just say, like, no, we need it. It's been good for our communities, it's been good for our schools, and yeah, they've seen the fruits of it, obviously, and a lot of people are inspired by them, because a lot of them do extra activities and extra workshops that they don't need to do outside of their, you know, paycheck or outside of their you know, required field. But they all seem to go above and beyond to, you know, to really make an influence.
One of the things that impressed me with the school that I was connected to there, and I actually taught one of the religious classes for the chaplain. They were gone one day and they asked me to be a sub and stuff, and that was fun. It was interesting. But they lead mission trips too, like some of the chaplains are like helping to do fundraisers and organize mission trips to different places, and that was interesting. Were you doing this the centers and the school visits and stuff before The Voice?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
How long had you been doing that? I didn't know about that.
Ah, right. So I've probably been going into the youth centers and the juvenile detention centers for around 3 years, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's been really encouraging.
So,
The saddest part, but the interesting part for me is realizing that for many kids, it's the best option for them to be, like, at a juvenile facility.
Wow.
A lot of them come. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, a lot of them come from homelessness, so they don't even have a home to go back to, which is why they do crime to survive, and why they live on the streets, and why they're around the types of people that they're around, because it's the only network or friendships or family that they have. And so the only life that they know is a life of hustle, which is unfortunately illegal. But then, in saying that, for them to have a bed, to they have warmth, they have people that they can trust inside, they have amazing programs and amazing resources where they would not have those things back in their communities, which is a shame. A lot of them come from rural parts of Australia, and some of them come from great parts of Australia, but just feel like they don't trust the system because something bad happened to their dad or their family, or the way that they were raised, they don't look at education the same way that they accept it on the inside, or they'll only be part of something if they trust you. Some of them would just, as simple as, like, they only go to school there because they have people that they know and can rely on, where on the outside they feel distant if they were to walk up to a school on their own. And obviously they'd have to, for most of them, they'd have to enroll themselves, and they don't understand how that works, and how they can yeah, how they can lead their own, I guess, yeah, life in that way. And so, I mean, there's a lot of good casework that's going on. They're all, each young person that comes in, they're all linked to a youth worker or a caseworker. So when they go on the outside, they have that kind of probation type officer that plays kind of the mentor role as well as keeping them accountable. But that was the biggest surprise for me, was realizing that after a few months inside, was just seeing that, wow, this is actually the best place for some of these kids. And, you know, they're like rehabilitated. It's not just that they get fed or they get to exercise, but for a lot of them, they're off drugs. They become clean. You know, they're thinking in a clean environment and given opportunities that, yeah, are only there to help benefit them in the long run.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's been 5 years, almost since we've been there. And so I didn't, you know, just with the little contact you and I have had, I didn't know that you were so involved with this, man. I mean, it's awesome. And I know that's your heart. Is it different nationalities and ethnicities, or is it kind of heavy one way or the other as far as kids are coming from city or from the outback or where?
Probably 70% are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, and including some of the Caucasian kids, because a lot of them are still Indigenous and have roots in that culture. Mm. And then probably, 20%, or probably 15% is like, white Australia, and then the rest would be Pacific Islanders and New Zealanders.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, there's a small part of, there's some Africans and then like some Asian, but yeah, they're a small amount.
Yeah. Let me back up for a second. Tell me the story of Chang. Like, where you were born, how you got where you're living. You can do the overview or you can go in depth with it. You do what you want to do, but tell me, like, what brought you to this moment today?
Well, my name is Chang Po Ching. People often take, a double or a triple take when I say that. It is a Chinese name. It doesn't help when I say that, my middle name's Livingston, though. So, which is my father's name, but Dad was named after the explorer David Livingston. I was born in New Zealand. My parents are from Samoa, so I'm Samoan, and I'm Australian on paper.
Nice.
So we moved over to Australia when I was about 9 years old, and then, ever since I've called Australia home. I don't support any Australian teams, though, still, unfortunately. Although I'm always I'm a proud Australian when I'm not in Australia. It's weird. It's a weird I think because I am Australian, and then when I'm in New Zealand, I'm just treated like an Australian by my family and friends. And then whether it's the Olympics that are on or whatever major event, I do, like, support Australia for that. Because, I mean, it is my country, but at the same time, I've got too many things, on the table, so... But we moved over here because Dad had the calling to come to be a minister, to study at the Bible College here in Brisbane. And then the plan was always to move back. That was always the plan, to move back. But then Dad felt called to stay in Australia, that our presence was needed here with us as a family. And we never went back to New Zealand, which we still get a bit of flack for, because, the Australian district in New Zealand's eyes keep stealing our people, but at the same time, it's all God's church. And so, I guess that's a quick background. And, I married my wife who I met at McDonald's, the place of dreams and hopes. And so I often say fast food brings people together for better or worse. And so... she was in high school still. I just finished, and I was studying music, and she is also she also has a music degree, but at the moment is just being a trooper, watching the kids, stay at home mom while I work. And so I'm involved in youth work as well, like sleepovers at youth in crisis houses, like kind of like homeless shelters. So I've probably been involved with them for about a year and a half. Involved in church ministries from a young age. Like as mentioned, dad's a pastor. I love the church. I had to grow to love the church. I grew to hate the church, and then I grew to love the church. But I think that's all part of it. We're all broken, and then you see people that are broken, but there's only one person that can fix us. And so that was a lot of fun growing up, thinking through that and wrestling through it in my teenage years. I'm trying to think. There's so many things that I want to include. Got two beautiful sons, Emmanuel and Nathaniel, who are 2.5 now and 13 months. So, third birthday coming up in November for our oldest. And if anyone has any tips on how to deal with tantrums, I think we're running out of ideas and patience. No. But they're okay. But they're good. I think I'll leave it at that. I think there's so many things, but I think I'll try and leave it short.
That's good.
I probably didn't leave it short, but
no, that's good. What have you done over the years to pay the bills, and what are you doing to pay the bills these days?
Doing music workshops and mentoring for young people who are at risk, and also I'm a wedding singer, not like Adam Sandler, but kind of like him. I sing at weddings, I sing at corporate functions, and pubs and restaurants. So anything from just myself up to a 7-piece band. So actually this weekend I fly up north to Mackay, which I think is about a 9-hour drive, maybe.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but up north. So I've never been to Mackay before. But so we travel around. If we're not doing weddings, we're playing for big companies. But that's been my main bread and butter for the last few years. And
Okay. So tell me the story